And Eileen will be your timer.
All right. Can you guys hear me all right?
Hi, Stephen.
All
Hi,
right. Thank
Eileen.
you. Okay. So I just after listening to the presentation from Allison, I just want to get like a blanket, a cup of tea, and just curl up on the couch. That was just so warming. So thank you, Allison. My name is Stephen S. I'm a compulsive overeater. I'm in North Jersey, and I'm very grateful to be here to share. To be a part of this, I have something written down I like to say at the beginning of whenever I talk, and that is I'm a compulsive eater who isolated and used food to avoid the pain of life. And by doing so, I avoided living. It's also important for my recovery to say that today is an expression of my opinion and is not about me. I'm the same as everyone here that has a desire to stop overeating. I'm a member of OA, grateful to share what I've learned. Abstinence is a corner point of what we do, what I do. And I'm going to talk about where I was, what it was to start looking for a solution, how I came to abstinence. I have had a moment where I had a relapse early on and had recovery. I'll talk about how I keep my abstinence and what it is that keeps me going day to day. So briefly, I started sneaking food. I guess it's overeating, but I was really dishonest about what I was eating at a younger age. I felt like I had no limit. Like the plate was a serving size. But then, if it got refilled, that was my new serving size. I liked to snack and I would graze like crazy. I remember being a young kid. Saturday mornings was when we had cartoons, not like all the media that's out there now. And I would have a box of cereal with me all afternoon, and that would be how I enjoyed Saturdays. As I got older, I started dealing with weight. I went to a popular weight loss program, got to my goal weight. I still have my lifetime membership card. Once I stopped going, everything, went right back. So I've done other diet plans, and ultimately it came down to me thinking that I could figure this out on my own. And really all I did was thinking I fought my way into a hole and I just kept going in and out of that place. I didn't think I needed help. I didn't want it. I thought I was smart enough to handle it. My before I came to program, my old program, we'll call it, was a combination of isolating, binging, overeating, being afraid, and then the shame of doing all those things. I had a very similar experience where I couldn't keep a job. I didn't have long-term relationships. I actually had, at one point I went back to school and I was doing well and I got accepted into a physical therapy program. And then I went into a deep dive and I never sent my application acceptance and then I lost it. So I figured out, oh, that's it. And I walked away. So I've sabotaged myself repeatedly over the years, not really doing more than just thinking about what I could do. And there's a point that I'm pointing it out for. My addictive foods, were salty or crunchy or sugary. Whenever I would eat this, whichever one it was, I would get a literal feeling of euphoria. I would feel lighter. I'd feel happy. I'd feel just untouched by the struggle or the pain or anything that I didn't want to worry about. I was one of those people who said, "Well, tomorrow I'll start doing better, or just this weekend, or just this once." That was my mantra. And over the years, I hurt the people around me. I would promise things I would never do. I would overpromise. I would be thinking that I was really clever about hiding that I was overeating. Clearly, my folks and my friends knew because they saw what I did, and food would miraculously diminish overnight in the refrigerator. So, believe it or not, my folks decided, okay, we had an old refrigerator with two handles on front. So they bought a long lock and they locked the refrigerator at night, which I'm a very logical, I'm a mechanical person. It took me all of about 10 minutes to figure out how to pick the lock. And I would go in and eat just enough that I thought was just enough so that no one would notice. But I think it was noticed, but I thought I was being clever about it. I would eat things that weren't mine. There were a few times I'd be at friends' house where they would say to me, "Hey, help yourself." And then I'd be like, "Self? Does that mean I can eat everything?" And myself would be like, "I guess so." So there would be, in one case it was a bag of snacks, and I polished it off. In multiple occasions, I had someone that was at that house come up to me and say, "Next time, don't do that." So I thought, if I just replaced whatever it was I ate, that I was doing the right thing. It really probably didn't go over very well, but it was where I was at the time. My high weight is about 284. I maintain a 50-pound weight drop, and between injuries and digestive issues, that seems to be about where my body wants to be, which was very hard for me to accept at first, but my bloods are good, my labs are good, my pressure is good. That's fine. I wear the same clothes for the last several years. I'm on the same notch on the belt, so I'm doing all I need to do to keep my body healthy, and that's enough for me. I came into program first in 2014 for about a year, and I immediately got the mechanics of it. I was very excited to do those things. I did not connect with anything else of the program, and by the end of the year, it was coming up on December, and I guess I didn't see it beforehand. I started pushing back on my sponsor. And by the end of the year, they had said to me that I wasn't following the things we discussed. I wasn't planning. And they could not be comfortable with their abstinence and sponsor me. So they told me that they were going to let me go. And I was like, "Yeah, no problem. I got this." I did not. I did not have it. Not by any stretch of the imagination. The realization that when things are going good, if I'm eating that way, great, but life is not like this. Life is up and down. And the first difficult thing that hit me, it just, I was back into the food. So I came back about a year later. I'm sorry, I came back. No, I'm sorry. I came back in 2018. It was about a year after being in program that I had my last effort day. It was December 26. I polished off. I actually remember in my head saying, "I'm done. F it." I killed it. And the next day, I woke up and said, "I can't do this again." And for me, at that moment, honesty was what turned me back to how I started to be abstinent again. I told the people in the meeting that I went to Sunday, I admitted it in my regular group on Tuesday, and I got serious about getting a sponsor. And at that point, the first step to the abstinence for me was being honest, admitting it, and taking an action. I think there's no way to say it with like the three A's: accept, admit, accept, and action, something of that nature. If I'm not honest about what I'm doing, then I'm putting myself in danger of making a hard left turn and going back to where I was. It permeates how I talk to my fellows. It's how I share, how I speak to my sponsees. It's a part of everything. It's the beginning for me. And the difference, thank you, Anne Marie. Awareness, acceptance, action.
That's 10 minutes, Stephen.
Thank you. Appreciate that. I had to, from that point, figure out what was next for me. I had to build my program. I had to find those pieces that made sense, that allowed me to keep my abstinence, that allowed me to keep in the program, because for me, it was always mechanical. There was no behavioral change. There was no spiritual change. It was literally being a part of a community, yes, but it was not all three of those pieces. So the next point to me was figuring out how to get that spiritual connection, how to change those behaviors. Being honest was what helped with my behaviors. So I'll get more into those things, but the connection started with me. I had a very difficult time with step three, with the idea of a higher power, and I had come up with an idea, and I used it, and it wasn't something that was meaningful to me. I struggled going forward. So for me to figure out how to get past that, I had to turn around and look back and say, what am I afraid of letting go? What am I holding on to that's keeping me from going forward? So I flipped it around. I said, well, food was my crutch. I like the idea of not feeling anything. But then I said, well, I don't want to be this person anymore. I want to be a different person that I know I can be, that I've felt at times before. So my spirituality became that. It was discovering who I am, who I want to be, and connecting to that person in a meaningful way. I try to connect to the moment, to what's going on around me, being present to myself. In other words, being honest about what I'm feeling, and to those who are around me, and firstly, people in program and my family. Once I did that, that became my spirituality or higher power, and I found a purpose. That was a big change for me. And I had mentioned honesty as being a big part of it. When I was moving forward into the 12 steps, I had gone through several sponsors and I connected with one, and we got along great. And I started going through the fourth step. Got to the end of all of the statements, questions. I had finished going over everything with my sponsor, and I thought I had been completely honest. And he said, take a week, look over everything, see if anything comes to mind, if whatever it may be. I didn't make it 2 days, and I called him up, and the stuff gushed out of me that I don't even know where half of it came from. And I remember it was, for me, like that final just boundary of holding back, being honest, and accepting what I needed to do. And I was like sweating, I'm like shaking, I'm just talking on the phone, and like, oh, I did this and that. And I guess I must have held back or thought, well, this isn't important, but it was. Once that happened, from then on, it became easier to share, became easier to be abstinent, became easy, everything became easier. There's no other way to put it. I took more seriously the fact that what I was doing in the program, working the steps, the tools, et cetera, was part of my self-care. And it wasn't a selfish act. It was what I needed to do to ground myself so I could be there for my family, so I could be there for those in program, for my friends. And most of my life, I did not look to the future because I did not see one. I never thought about having a family or a house. My jobs, the longest I had a job for was 4 years. It was something that changed my perspective in a positive way. So, in all of that, I had the mechanics down. I found my spirituality, and I needed to change my behavior. So abstinence for me is a couple of things. I deal with digestive issues, some that I was born with, some that I caused myself. I always get, I don't like sharing this because it's kind of, it was me at my worst as far as food goes, but I do share it because it's important to talk about it. I was the person who would, go out to fast food, buy two meals, eat one in the car ride home, have the rest with my family, and then late at night I'd go and binge on leftovers. That was like the ideal to keep myself out of my head and numb and not thinking about anything. I got to the point where I would eat so much that I'd wake up in the middle of the night with reflux, to use a kinder term. I never was a person who purged, but I would get such bad reflux, it would be painful. It damaged the base of my esophagus. It's part of the root of the damage that gives me panic attacks. Because if I feel full, it feels like I'm having a heart attack. And then I would panic. So what would I do at 2, 3 in the morning when I got this reflux? It would wake me up out of a dead sleep. Well, I would take a medication to take care of that. I would maybe get something like tea or naturally a carbonated beverage because they were around. And as everything would settle down naturally, because it made sense to me, I would eat something else so I can go back to sleep. It's nuts. It's why would I do that to myself? There's no thoughtful idea that I've ever had where I would say, well, I'm not going to do that anymore because I think it's wrong. It's behavior. It's what I relied on for much of my life. I didn't start dealing with, I'm in my mid-50s now. It's been, I was in my 40s when I started to get into 12-step and deal with having a therapist as well as being in the group and being honest and committed to it. My behaviors around the foods were because of IBS and diverticulitis, there's certain foods I can't eat, nuts, seeds. I've had gout, so I have to stay away from fatty meats, raw vegetables. These are things that will physically harm me. And there would be times when I'd be eating a bag of some of this stuff, and I almost went to the hospital one night. I thought I was going to have, a rupture, and then as soon as it calmed down, I'd start eating it again. It's mind-bogglingly unbelievable that I did these things looking back. If it was a not damaging food, then I'd look at my alcoholic foods, anything salty or crunchy or sugary. And I made a list of anything that was in that category. I also consider part of my abstinence taking my daily medications and my vitamins at a certain time every day. I've got, gosh, I don't know if you guys could see this. I feel like, I'm 100 years old. I've got the pill thing. I've got it because I have to, because I will forget to take them at different times of the day. It's what I need to do. Do I want to? No, I have to. And then I mentioned mechanics, spirituality, and then behavioral. I had to look at my behaviors, how I eat, when I eat, and I had to try to be aware of these things. I'm a fast eater. Not like I will eat quickly because I can only put so much down my throat at one time, but I notice that I will eat something and my fork or spoon or whatever be ready for the next one. And I'm not done finishing the first one. So I had to learn to slow down my eating behavior. That was one of them. Eating in the kitchen, eating from the fridge. There's one behavior I think I may have gotten from my father because I thought it looked smart to do. He would cook something and then be eating it from what he cooked it from. And I'm like, well, that makes sense. I don't have to waste a plate. That's awesome. Eating alone at night while watching TV. all of these behaviors had to go out. And one of the big ones for me is I do not, if I can help it, go to the market, go shopping without having had a meal beforehand. That literally caused me a panic attack when I was first getting abstinent. I was in the
Never been
supermarket.
abstinent. Sorry.
Thank you. I was in the baked goods aisle and I stopped halfway down it. And like, I have no idea what happened. I started to panic. I literally, fortunately at the time I had a sponsor, called them up, told them what was going on. They talked me off a ledge. And it's extremely rare if I ever go to the store without having a recent meal. I'm at the point in my recovery now where I'm not triggered by that like I used to be. But I was never that person who was struck abstinent. For me, it was always steps and having to learn the awareness of what it was that was causing me behaviorally to deal with that. So from all of that behavior, whenever I feel something or I now have an awareness of something, I have to share about it. If it's a feeling, a behavior, or I start ruminating about something, I share about it. I talk to someone about it. I make a call. And then I make a change. I take an action. I don't go to that place. I don't go to that aisle. I avoid what I can. And if I can't, then I bring something that I can eat with me. So that's what got me to the point of being abstinent. So how do I stay that way? How do I keep the abstinence? What is it that's important for me to do? And I think I'll interject at this point and say there are, we all heard Allison warmly speak to us before. There are parallels I see with her, but we have our own program. There are so many different ways to get to abstinence, but it comes down to being honest about what for us it means and how we can do it. What it is that makes me feel this way behaviorally, what it is that I need to connect to spiritually. So if I look at the tools and the steps, okay, one, getting through the steps was instrumental. The steps for me are a process that got me clean physically, emotionally, and spiritually, so that I live day by day through that process. How do I stay connected? Because I mentioned my spirituality. Between a combination of meditation for me, which is a directed thought. It's taking a breath, stepping back, looking at it from, 1,000 feet, and putting myself in the position of either the person I'm talking to. I have to think about it, contemplate it, take a pause sometimes, come back to it later. It allows me to, if I'm in a position where I'm like anxious, because I do get and I'm medicated for anxiety, I may have to come back to it. I may have to distance myself or get help to do it. The first three steps are an important tool or important part of my abstinence. Step one is honesty, and I gravitate towards the spiritual principles of the steps. Honest about what I'm doing, what's working, and what's not. And if I don't know what to do, then I don't do it right then. I'll talk to a fellow, I'll come up with a plan, and then I'll take that step. I needed to believe that there was hope. And how did I get my hope? I saw people like all of you out there coming together like this. I saw that it was working. I made changes, and gradually I started to see the benefits of that. And that continued my hope, and it just got bigger. I had to make that choice. So, honesty, hope, and step three being faith. I had faith that my sponsor, who I saw succeeding, was telling me things that worked for him. I started to get confidence in that, and I said inside to myself, I can do this. There are times when it's very hard. There are times when I don't want to. There are times when I don't want to go to a meeting. Times when, boy, you have a good day, it's easier. You have a bad day, then it becomes a snowball for me, and I have to rely on my program, the tools that I have to get me through those moments, because life is not a flat plane.
Flatlining.
Thank you. Life is a series of events. There's a quote that I've heard about the game of poker, where it's periods of boredom broken by periods of like just absolute panic, because you're waiting and you're like, okay, things are good, and then something can come and knock me off my chair. I had to have those three: honesty, hope, and faith, to keep me behaviorally and spiritually where I needed to be, where I do need to be. The tools are an important part of keeping my abstinence. My meal plan is my new normal. It is my normal. I don't like routines. I don't like lists. I don't like plans. I had to add them and build on them slowly for me to internalize them and make them a part of me. It's a fact that I will overeat if I don't do this. If I didn't have a limb or something of that nature, there's nothing that's going to make that limb come back. I have to accept that that's my normal. I have to accept that this behavior is my normal. If I don't do this, then I'm going to go back and I won't do that. My action plans, I've used an action plan to get rid of debt, hoarding, medical issues, because I wouldn't go to the doctor. I use the phone, I do service. My best advice when it comes to the tools is the best tool in my toolbox is the one I will use. If I don't feel like writing, it's a terrible tool. If I can make a phone call, I should go to that tool every time because I'm willing to use it until I get enough momentum that I'm willing to use the other ones. That's how I got to use the tools. And the last part of how I keep my abstinence, excuse me, comes down to motivation and inspiration. And I look at 10, 11, and 12 for that. I make mistakes every day. I have to keep aware of the things that I do or don't do. As I mentioned, I'm an isolator. I have to take action. If I don't take action, then my old habits will take hold and I will sequester myself. I will be quiet. I will not do things. And then I will start to lose that connection to that person I mentioned I wanted to be. I have to realize that I am not alone. I had to realize that I'm not doing this alone. I'm doing this with you guys. I'm doing this with my family. My whole family knows how I eat. My girlfriend cooks things for me in a way that I can eat it. She is a part of my meal plan. My friends, when I go to visit them, they know how I eat. I didn't go to them saying, "Hey, I'm a member of OA." I said, "I can't eat this way anymore. This is how I eat." And they go, "Okay." So, at the beginning, I was a little shy to talk about it, but now it's this is my new normal, as I mentioned. I'm going to wrap up here in a second. I think the most important thing about abstinence and getting there and keeping it comes down to being aware that what I was doing was not working for me. Being teachable, being willing to try things. And if it didn't work, that's okay. Try something else. There is a way for each of us to find our abstinence, learn about it, and keep it. I think it comes down to taking that step, staying connected, staying in the group, keep coming back. And as I mentioned in the steps, honesty, hope, and faith. And that's my motivation to keep doing the mechanics, to keep my behavior right, and to keep my spiritual connection. And I'll stop there. Thank you.